Hello and welcome back to Podcasting as Praxis. I'm David, my pronouns are he and him.
I'm James, my pronouns are they and them.
I'm Rob, mine he and him.
And I'm Alistair, my pronouns also he and him.
Just right. The four of us, no Jamie, please don't turn off the podcast.
No, what? Actually, you shouldn't, because I want to wish, you know, ourselves and my fellow podcasters, and certainly you, the listener, a hearty congratulations, because we've all been upgraded from, you know, merely sort of leftist.
From the previous hour to the next hour.
No. From sort of, you know, vaguely online, you know, leftist discontent to we are all, as it turns out, secret agents of variously Russia, China, and Iran. So congratulations.
Well, not a secret anymore, Rob. Thank you. God damn it. We've been keeping that under the hat all this time and you just blurt it out in the pod. How dare you?
None of this is fucking new. Sorry, I've been under the employ of Vladimir Putin since fucking 2015. How is this new?
Yeah, President Xi, personally.
I mean, to be, yeah, this is true. All five of us were, you know,
it's the same
in there before it was cool.
I turn them all down. Always leave them wanting more.
Sorry, I'm loving the image of like the WeWork for foreign spies, except it's, you know, it's spelled with Chinese characters, of course, because they're licensing the building. Just subleasing
the Havana
to ISIS.
Hotel.
Alistair, has no one just had like your has no one like had your loyalty since Robert Mugabe died? Or
yeah, I mean, no one else can offer me $1 trillion.
Not in such a small package, at least. No, actually, this is this came from last week from Good Morning Britain, and it was in response to the fact that Kate Middleton apparently has cancer, and that means we should all feel very bad for ourselves for making jokes online.
I mean,
but I thought I was making paid posts for the Kremlin.
Yeah, but they were
like
mean.
It's just a job.
So like, you should not only basically like the I don't know who the fucking reporter was, some gormless prick. Basically, like the quote is like, "Oh, the royal family is always the target of abuse." But quote, "In the last few weeks, we have seen conspiracy theories and cruel comments, and I would simply like to point to David Icke as to the existence of, you know, conspiracy theories about the royals that far precede, you know, our humble efforts and, you know, jokes." Basically,
yeah.
I mean, they shouldn't have been posting such fucking bonkers shit before they announced that she had cancer, frankly. She's working on a special project, the special project being cancer. Yo, what the fuck?
No, it was Photoshop she was working on.
Yeah. No, Alistair was right. There was some bit that was like leaked to, I don't know, some fucking paper, some, you know, fucking worm on two legs that call themselves a royal correspondent, that like Kate will be back with Easter with, you know, a bombshell announcement, and, you know, that turns out to be like, yeah, I have cancer.
There was no way. You cannot fucking possibly start blaming foreign insane actors or whatever because you tried and failed to do a fucking Photoshop excuse.
Yeah.
Like, it's so bad. It's how are they so bad at it as well? Like, it would have been, you could have got any fucking
Photoshop
dickhead off
Photoshop Friday would have been
job.
Looking down their nose at that shit.
Yeah.
Give them back, you are a royal, they don't even fit. Yeah.
I've just heard from friends of the royal family. They've told me in great confidence that Kate will make the desert bloom. I'm not sure what that means, but I'm looking forward to it.
It's all because the royals are fucking cheap.
They're calling her the Kwisatz Haderach.
Oh God, don't. Let's not cross that discourse, please. But still,
the special project has been doing ungodly amounts of spice.
That would be mint, though. Like,
if
Kate is just like turned up with like bright blue eyes and like, you know, that would be
that would be fucking sick. I'm sorry, they should have photoshopped her eyes blue, and this whole thing would have been put to bed immediately.
Yeah, exactly.
But they couldn't exactly. Because as I was saying, like, the royals are just incredibly cheap. They won't actually hire a proper like PR team to like do all the stuff like social media management and like photoshopping for them. Like, they refuse to spend money on employing people to make them look good. And instead, we get all this half-ass shit, which, you know, I mean, swings and roundabouts.
I mean, you're not wrong, because I saw a video the other day of It was the I think it was the producer on the Newsnight interview with Prince Andrew. And she was basically saying, after that whole interview had been filmed, just, you know, they just wrapped on the filming, she turned to the PR person from the royal family and just said, "How do you think that went?" to which the PR person was like, "Oh, it's fantastic." And like, these people are so disconnected from, like, the perception of an average person that it, like, it makes you think David Icke might have a point, but obviously he doesn't.
Do you think, like, their PR team, like, they're not, partly because they're low paid, partly because they're, like, sycophants for royals, do you think they're just too afraid to tell the royals, like, listen, you need to learn how to come across like an actual human being? Do you think they're just, like, incapable of giving Her Maj and all the rest of them some basic structured criticism? Like, you know, hey, don't make up lies like you can't sweat. That doesn't, like, actually come off well in front of the public. Because even if it's true, you're creepy.
It was a fucking Newsnight producer they were talking to. They probably just assumed that actually no one came up and put a Yushchenko on the prince when he wasn't looking, so we got away with it.
I mean, to be honest, like, it's more like a dog advising an alien on how to, you know, manage public relations.
Yeah. I genuinely think a dog advising an alien would do a better job. Seriously? Like,
yeah, a dog would certainly make an alien more relatable, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, my sort of generalized theory about this is like that it's very difficult for like the royals to live, for this generations of royals to like live in the new world, because like Queen Elizabeth was not really perceived as like she was like, I think, the last like monarch in the true sense, whereas like William and Kate and Andrew to some extent and Charles definitely, they're like sort of very special celebrities about whom the press needs to be like a little bit nice. You see what I mean? Like there's sort of a difference between that. Like they're not anymore like actually these very special people. Like they're just kind of there, you know,
The Queen was effectively untouchable in that regard. Charles isn't, but also I don't think anyone cares enough to do anything. Like, he's untouchable in the way that no one wants to touch him.
I mean, he's sort of already, like, he got sort of blown up, like, years ago already with Diana and, like, you know, the tapes about him wanting to be a tampon and all that. And, like, I think that was, like, probably the last moment when there was, like, some actual, like, royal mystique. And ever since that, it's just, like, one sort of slow slide into just like being celebrities by default of birth, like even more than whatever the fuck that Rob, son of David Beckham is.
I mean, Rob, think about it. Like, so obviously, like, royals are all about the fucking, I hate the phrase, pomp and circumstance, right? It's all this like showman. It's showmanship. That's all it is. And when you strip that all away, what are you left with? A bunch of extremely disconnected, extraordinarily wealthy people and powerful people who have no idea about anything other than this like bubble that they inhabit, in which the media and they sort of go back and forth over issues that don't affect anyone other than the royals, essentially. And once you take away all that, you are left with fucking Prince Andrew explaining that he used to not sweat, and he was actually just being normal in Woking Pizza Express, you know, like.
Yeah. So like they're just, I think, you know, especially like, I think Charles sort of still has like a vestige of it, basically, because he still just exists in the shadow of his mother. But I think, like, you know, when he dies,
it's only because of the hat. It's only the hat. The hat gives him that power. But until that hat's, you know, like, as soon as that hat's away, then none of these people have it. And until they get it, none of these people fucking have it. He's, like I say, he's only fucking getting away with being who he is just now because everyone's like, there's no point. It's the lowest hanging of fucking fruit to go after Charles in some way. And he's just not doing anything because he's the most boring fucking cunt out. So,
you know, I mean, I do think in terms of, like, if you talk about the hat, I do think that, like, now he is... you know, because of the weird deference that, that the UK has for the monarchy in general, and, you know, newspaper editors in particular want to get a knighthood, you know, like, they won't go after him in that way, because it is, you know, however you term it, it is not the done thing, because they never, like, they went after someone like Prince Philip, like, a little bit, right? But they didn't really, like, try to, like, snap him, basically, you know?
No, like, because we spent years going, ha, look at the funny racist. Isn't it funny?
Exactly. But, like, even later on, when, you know, the racism was even less acceptable than it was when he was originally saying it, like, nobody really, or, like, you know, the last the sort of thing he did in public, which was to, like, run over someone and then not get indicted for, you know, for seriously injuring someone with his fucking Range Rover. But nobody asked that question, or, like, seriously, like, go, you know, nobody goes after, went after him and, you know, asked serious questions. Whereas, like, Andrew, you could always destroy, because Andrew was, like, so clearly a spare. You know, like, you could destroy Andrew because he was never going to wear the crown.
Yeah. Bear in mind, though, that running someone over wasn't the last thing that Philip did. The last thing that he did was actually in death, when he welcomed everyone to City 17 from every single bus stop and fucking adboard in the country.
That's true. I do. I keep forgetting.
Getting mad after all the news channels go black.
Yeah, his last act was to make train travel fucking impossible.
Well, I mean, even less possible.
And ruined light entertainment across the country.
Welcome to City 17. Where am I? It's kind of hot here. Yeah.
Anyway, moving on from that, so, like, I have more good news for you. You know, in the sign that Britain is, you know, a good country that has no serious problems whatsoever going on. So, for a while now, like, there have been these pictures popping up on social media, and, like, you must have seen them, the ones with, like, I don't know, chocolate eggs in anti-thievery cases, or, like, a pound of mint in, like, a GPS tracked, like, anti-thievery.
Joe Swinson is fucking raging. So much plastic on those eggs, she hates it.
You're right, though. It has been everywhere. Just chocolate egg and bio, just non-stop.
We have converted the Easter eggs into dead man switches. If you pick up the egg, you must purchase the egg or it will explode.
Yeah.
Playing hot potato on Gmod with a Cadbury's egg in your local co-op. Yes, love it.
Love to put my hand in the gommy star.
Oh.
If this egg stops traveling at 50 miles an hour, it will explode.
I think they call it the egg bars, that couldn't slow down.
Anyway, so, like, I mean, so, like, but, like, you've seen those things, right? I mean, I live in a country where there's no anti-thievery locks, but in supermarkets, but I'm sure, but when I was last time in the big Tesco, I saw them on, like, a whole bunch of shit that they weren't on before. It was a bit weird. But, like, I'm pleased to report, or at least LBC is pleased to report, that we've reached a new frontier on the, you know, the war against the honest shoplifter. Apparently, quote, Greggs has begun arming its workers with body cameras following a surge in sausage roll
theft. I thought that this is going a completely different direction.
Yeah. You have 13 seconds to comply. Put down the yum-yum.
Pick up that sausage roll, citizen.
So like, they're not the first ones. Apparently, like, Tesco and Lidl have already been doing this, but they're the new Greggs body cams can pick up to 90 minutes of video material. And so they're basically trialing this in London Bridge Station and a few other places. And apparently, quote, a sign has been placed outside the shop which reads, "Keeping everyone safe."
Okay, a lot of questions being raised by my sign.
I mean, apparently, like, some of their staff have also been assaulted, which is, like, clearly not all right. But, you know, like, honestly, fuck me. Like, if you were working in the Greggs and you saw somebody stealing a fucking, you know, sausage roll, A, no, you didn't, and B, no, you definitely didn't. But it's like, are you stopping someone from, like, stealing a fucking sausage roll if you're working Greggs? I mean, I sincerely hope you're not.
If you work in Greggs, I hope you're the one stealing the sausage rolls, frankly.
Yeah, also that.
I'm going to put a caveat on the, it's not okay if it's the staff. If it's the security staff, I don't care.
Yeah, that's true.
Fuck them. Also, because like, I guarantee you, however they were assaulted, they fucking started it.
I mean, I fucking remember back in, talking about Glasgow, right? Glasgow used to have like security guards only at night and only in that one McDonald's next to Central Station, basically.
I don't think security guards in McDonald's is a novel thing. For some reason, yeah. Things get very rowdy in there at night.
Yeah, like usually about 3 a.m. once all the clubs have well and truly emptied, and yeah, it was that's the only
hate
place
mobs against the fucking the McShittle. That's what it is.
Mm.
They're all there to kick fuck at the hamburger law.
The McDonald's anti-monarchists go to war with the Burger King monarchists.
Oh dear. But since then, like, it has been becoming more common though. Like, we are getting more and more like necessity for guards in these shops. And I say necessity in the loosest possible fucking terms, but
oh, yeah,
like,
necessity, you know, because they said there was one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, frankly, it might have something to do with all the price gouging in, you know, just general when it comes to all of our food and drink, maybe, perhaps. That might be causing people to get desperate.
Presumably, and it's because there's so many more fucking homeless people outside, which they're shit terrified of.
Well,
it's just,
you know,
perfectly
I'm not
normal.
Saying,
it's perfectly normal for the price of bread to increase over 50% in 4 or 5 years. And the only way that we can conceivably keep this system going of having supermarkets which buy produce and then sell it on to the consumer is by giving everyone that works in our store a camera that records every single movement of the customers and the employees as well. This is the only possible acceptable solution to the problem of people not having any food to eat, I'm afraid.
It's just stupid because hangry people will get into brawls when food's around. It's just like it's human nature. It's well established throughout history. And like,
the people with McDonald's are actually in survival mode.
I mean,
grab every single fucking French fry you can.
Well, before they genuinely, for a second, let's pause, right?
Throwing my head into the fryer like a fucking oasis.
But, like, you know, alcohol lowers inhibitions, right? And at the same time, yeah, you know, people are angry when they're hungry, and that has scientifically been observed to be heightened when there is food present and they are denied that food, such as when they're having to wait in a fucking queue in the middle of the night at the McDonald's. So, yeah, that's, like, actually, if you're looking at it from a perspective of things we have observed of human nature, that's a perfect circumstance to get otherwise reasonable people to start, like, throwing punches. It's kind of silly. But then, if you then extend that out and forget about the drunken part, but just have people being hungry and homeless and struggling, then yeah, this is going to be a reality of it. And it doesn't have to fucking be this way. Like, if we were to, say, take hold of our housing market, drive down the rents, kick out the landlords, and, you know, perhaps also take hold of our, like, supermarket supply chains and just, you know, bluntly insist that no, you're not allowed to price gouge. Maybe take hold of our energy markets and do the same thing and say, no, you're not going to be allowed to price gouge anymore. And also, we're going to build infrastructure to store natural gas so we don't get seasonal spikes.
You can't. No, because that's communism. Therefore, it's bad to do that because it's communism.
It's fucking aggravating that in all seriousness they say shit like that, like it's communism, when this isn't even communism. This is just like, this is basic liberalism of market intervention for the stability of like the marketplace and the free exchange of commerce. It's just
liberalism doesn't work like that anymore. We're at a point on the spectrum away from that. Like, it's no longer possible. The window has shifted.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
you might get some of that
stuff,
but it'll also be fascist. Like, that's the best that you can fucking get now, is maybe some sort of fucking controls for certain people. That'll be it. Like, that's the best we can fucking have now, because that's the trajectory that the liberals have fucking fully set us on. Thanks again, cunts.
I mean, I say again, like, you know, stuff like, why not just have a, you know, simply a non-profit state-run supermarket, you know, not, you know, I'm not asking for much, I don't think, but hey ho.
Well, those
no, but it's just
food kit. I can't remember what they were called. They were like, they're called like
canteens,
British restaurants,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah,
and they existed as, what was it, like the '70s or something? It was very like very recent in relative terms.
I think they got abolished before then, but you're not
something
wrong.
Like
they did
that
last a long while.
Yeah,
but like, the best you can hope like for British is maybe they'll relaunch Wimpy's. That's the best you can fucking get.
Is it cheap? If it's a relaunched Wimpy's and it's cheap, then I'm okay with that.
Corrected for inflation, sorry.
All I remember of Wimpy's is they used to serve baked potatoes, so you may indeed be in luck, James. Anyway, shall we swiftly move on to something that is definitely existing in our society and is going very, very well indeed. I want to briefly go back to our favorite Freeport I want to go back to Teesside for a little bit, because things are going very, very well there. So last week, the Teesside Freeport, which is formerly named the South Tees Development Corporation, or STDC, they lost like a big legal claim against one of the largest ports in the UK, which is essentially sort of inside the Freeport zone. It's sort of enveloped by it. It's run by an entity called PD Ports, and it's, I think, the fifth or the sixth largest like active port in the UK. It, in turn, is owned by the giant investment firm Brookfield. So, like, none of these, again, are good guys. But to its, you know, very limited credit, at least the port is real and provides actual jobs to real people who do work there, while the Freeport has brought in, you know, a whole bunch of nothing apart from profiting a few very well-connected businessmen intimately associated with Ben Houchin. So, you know,
mission accomplished then, right?
It pretty much. So, like, the lawsuit I'm talking about was not in UK High Court, but in one of the courts in London, at least, and was brought by the STDC and its sister organisation, Teeswork Limited. And their contention was basically, like, a very simple, like, right-of-way issue. So the Freeport was claiming that the actual port, so PD Ports, had no right-of-way across their site where the old Teesside Steelworks used to sit. And the port authorities said, yeah, we do. Basically, in 2019, and we touched on this when we talked about this in more detail, the port authorities, so PD Ports, donated like a small but very critical piece of land to the Freeport to create a big roundabout that basically allows access to the main development site in the Freeport currently, which is where a Korean company is building a factory for building the chassis for big wind turbines. And without having that very specific plot of land to build that roundabout, it would have been very difficult to get material in and out. So that was like freely given by the port to the Freeport authorities, because they said, well, if we give this away and the Freeport turns into a success, probably more people use the port, it will benefit us, da di da di da. And in return for that donation, again, according to the port authorities, the Freeport promised that they would continue to have access through the Freeport and its land for their own traffic, but a formal agreement of this right-of-way document was very, very slow in coming. Indeed, it still hasn't been produced. So all of this might have had something to do that Ben Houchin is actually on record, or at least was on record in 2019, as wanting to buy the port itself. And, you know, maybe if that port doesn't have right-of-way anymore and it can't transport it's good or have access to emergency services in case of flooding, then, you know, maybe that port goes down in value and you can buy it for a lot cheaper than it was in the past.
It's fine.
Right, okay. To me, this sounded more like the most American suburban my neighbour won't turn his fucking stereo down ass court case. But,
I mean,
okay,
it makes
more sense.
It is pretty much that. It's like it's sort of yes or no. It's kind of like the only reason I'm talking about this is because the stakes are quite high and the numbers involved are in the, you know, several millions and higher, or billions if you're talking about the whole Freeport site in and of itself. So, but also the other reason I'm talking about it is because this is one small fuckery around this Freeport. So basically, what happened afterwards is like, instead of, as promised, you know, giving the port authority like right of way so they could take their trucks across the site, the Teesworth Development Company started claiming that all port traffic across their land was now quote unquote inherently dangerous and should know, and they tried to block all traffic, i.e. they tried to pretty much strangle the Britain's fifth largest port to, you know, reinforce their own claims and, you know, possibly lower the value of the port itself. to buy it out.
This has a distinct like 12th century fabricating claims on some other guy's
fishing
land
weirs
type.
Yeah.
So like in all seriousness, do you know what this is ultimately heading towards? Because I'm loving this and I've been thinking it for a while now. You're not wrong, Alistair, you just got the well, a very particular kind. Like, you're not wrong. I think it's just a little bit too early. I think it ends in warring city-states. Like, real, like, Italian-style warring city-states, frankly. Because that's exactly what this shit is.
Oh, well, shit. I mean, the next move again was sort of reminiscent of sort of Italian fraternal organizations. Because the SCDC, the Freeport authorities, then under Ben Hodgson, then sued the port authorities over this right-of-way business, but that, okay, but we are willing to settle this claim, but if only if you hand over 90% of any dues or taxes you receive at the port.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
okay.
Good-looking port there. Landlords. Be a shame if anything happened to your access.
Yeah. Just like, is racketeering not the word for this? Is that not what that is?
It's I mean, you know, you might say that. I couldn't possibly comment, but it's
like it seems to share some hallmarks.
Well, I mean, the judge in his verdict this week also called it a ransom note. So, you know, as does the FT. So I think we're safe to repeat those words. But yeah, that was.
Do you know what it actually has the energy of? It has the energy of like an 80s crime movie side quest.
Yeah,
it does a bit, but like the interesting that Freeport is an interesting thing, and nobody will convince me otherwise, because like it's funded by to the tune of like hundreds of millions, and you know, again, like every paper will tell you, you know, by the taxpayer, which I'm not quite sure that's how it works directly, but you know, we can say that like public cash was involved, and you know, public cash in the form of council money was certainly involved, and now at minimum £4 million of that cash will have to you know, leave the coffers of this fucking Freeport to pay for the frivolous lawsuit that they started, basically over trying to hold an actual working port to ransom, which is an incredible fucking move, basically. And all of this is basically
Is it still gunboat diplomacy if you do it on the land, if you're, like, land-blockading them?
Ajax diplomacy, I think, is what I think is might best be called. But yeah, and all of this
very
is
loud, but doesn't work.
All of this is basically, like, to create, again, this fucking bullshit zones where lots of employment rights and taxes don't need to exist, and you know, basically you as the worker can be more freely exploited. So, and again,
yeah, but think of the poor Fabergé hot dog stand.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the only legitimate economic activity that's occurring in all of those borders is the hot dog guy.
Well, that and grifting, because like some middlemen and some lawyers and some property developers got, you know, increasingly rich out of not just this court case, but, you know, the whole existence of this Freeport. And the reason I keep banging on about it is because this one, apart from, you know, British Vault, my other fucking obsession, is, you know, these are the most visible signs of leveling up, which, yeah, bullshit, but, you know, there was a piece out recently that, like, Starmer has also been promising, like, more devolution and more combined authority mayors, you know, when Labour comes into power and they all want to do, you know, good deals
with
the private sector.
Balloon that has been let go makes flopping noise as it barges into wall.
Stop doing this shit. Bring back the regional councils. We don't need fucking mayors.
It doesn't, well, like, or like Dave, it doesn't matter, like, Give it 10 minutes. Give it to the end of this recording, and the policy will have been dropped or replaced or whatever. Like, Keir Starmer is a quantum waveform, and if you ever observe him, you collapse him.
What? How does that work? Right, genuinely, right? If people are so convinced that a Labour government is this fucking inevitability we all need to make peace with, what the fuck does that actually look like? Like, what the fuck do they do?
Like, that's it. That is the one concrete policy I can guarantee you.
Yep.
Arms for Israel. crackdowns.
Buying the vapes.
Privatized NHS.
And selling the NHS. Like, those are your, that's your hat trick. Stick that in the manifesto.
Right, okay, yeah, that's all red. Like, they'll continue doing the shit that's already been done. But what's going to be the thing that they actually do? Like, as much as the Tories do fuck all, they've got levelling up. Like, they have this Freeport shit. They have the fucking British vote nonsense. It's all fucked and it's not going to work out. But they're doing something. What the fuck is Labour's thing going to be?
They're going to be, they're going to create, the same. You know, even, they're going to have their, what was it again, the Infrastructure Council, the Business Development Council, more regional mayor or combined authorities, just more little guys for everywhere. You know, just more layers and layers of opportunity and obfuscation and baseline, more opportunities for grifts of property developers. You know, all of
now
them.
Now is the time to say that you're a management consultant. Now is the time to do that. Because if you can get even one fucking month on that CV, your quid's in when Labour comes into power.
You're really not, because what it will actually be is exactly the same shit, and as Rob says, it'll be just rooted through different hands. It'll be different people's turn at the trough. And, like, being a management consultant or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's like, are you part of the right company with the right associations that's offering, like, board places to Labour MPs and that kind of shit? In which case, you will get your particular bunch of, like, management consultants to get paid and you'll cream off the top of it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just going to be exactly the same shit, but someone else gets paid. That's it. That's what they're offering.
By all accounts, by the way, like the most likely channel through which like this Labour pipeline will flow through, by, you know, from all the articles I read about it, is a firm called Arden Strategies, which is run by you know, Labour ultimate success election winner Jim Murphy.
Yeah.
Fuck off. No future where Jim Murphy becomes a success is fucking tenable. Like,
well, we're already here, David.
You do whatever you can. Yeah. You prevent that timeline. You delete that timeline.
We're here. I regret to inform you. That man's gotten extremely wealthy already because everybody, you know, in the corporate world is now trying to buy access to Labour. You know, they want cheap seats now, so they have front seats later. You know, like it.
And I've been saying that this is the bad timeline for how long?
But there's one more, you know, moving on from Teesside, there's one more sort of slightly obscure little government body that I wanted to talk about, because there was, its head had some interesting, well, I thought at least, interesting testimony in the House of Commons last week. So, as you may or may not remember, there have been like a whole bunch of scandals around like auditors and auditing, and you know whether or not they've actually been producing correct results in the last few years. So Carillion, the collapse of Carillion was a huge one, where I can't remember who the auditor was, but you know they'd signed it off for years saying this is a healthy company when it clearly wasn't. BHS was another one, as was Thomas Cook, and like a whole bunch of others. So like the job in a sort of, you know, economics textbooks kind of world, like the job of the auditor is a vital one in capitalist society, because you need a so-called quote-unquote external trustworthy person to go over the books and the finances of a company and say yes, what these people have written down about themselves is actually is verifiably true.
You need to have someone that's like objectively trustworthy, because the entire system that this operates in is one of cutthroat bullshit and just lies. The entire thing built on lies. Stock value? Oh, that's a real number. Yep.
Well, I mean, like, so economically textbook, that's why you have auditors, and that's why they are so critically important in a capitalist economy like ours, and they become even more important as modern capitalism gets more financialized and more abstract, because like not only do you deal with like one company, you know, like Carillion or something, you deal with 7,000 little side entities that are based in Luxembourg and Malta and the British Virgin Islands, and you know somebody has to check as to whether all this weird shit amounts to some version of the recognized truth, as you'd understand. But of course, the problem with that whole system is that in the past, auditors used to simply do auditing. That was kind of all they did. But in the last couple of decades, what has develop more and more is that, like, under the same company, say PricewaterhouseCoopers, from, as you remember from the last episode, not only have like an auditing arm, they also have a consulting arm, and that consulting arm earns a lot of money from consulting with the same clients that the auditors do. Now, the company always says, oh no, we keep these things very far apart, but it is remarkable that how the higher the fees get, the more positive the auditor signing off does tend to become.
Just a weird coincidence.
Just coincidence. Yeah.
So, like, so again, in previous years, and more in the last couple of years, like, more firms go under that have received clean bills of health from their auditors, like, 3 months before, 6 months before. They've put their signature on the set. No, this is a fine company. You can invest in it. Indeed, maybe you should invest in it. You know, it's all fine, so good. Don't worry about it. And because those companies have kept imploding, and because we've seen more and more, like, not good links, let me put it that way, between like the auditors and the companies they audit. So the government has promised to do something about fixing this quality again, because it's very vital to the function of capitalism. But for some like unknowable reason, the government doesn't seem to be in much of a hurry to do like any of these planned reforms. So as it turns out,
obviously, Rob, obviously it's external factors like the pandemic or the war in Ukraine. Those are why these
things
are happening.
Being distracted by a bird.
Yeah, the auditors simply could not have foreseen that this would happen. Ergo, the company was healthy at the time, etc., etc. I don't care that BHS was before both of those fucking activities. It doesn't matter. The excuse holds.
You know how sometimes you find like a loose thread on your shirt or something, and you just end up pulling that thing for like 10 minutes. Yeah, it's just that, yeah. You know, all of a sudden it's been 10 years, and the company that you've been doing auditing for all this time has gone bust, and you cannot be held responsible because you were busy, yeah, you know, pulling that thread, just, you know, oh, and then you look up and it's all gone to shit. Whoops. Yes, I'll go on to the next company.
It's that, but rather than a thread, it's the little hangnail that you pull on, and it's just a strip of skin right the fucking way out of the body.
Yeah, you unzip yourself by accident.
Yeah.
No, see, you guys have got it wrong. You got to ask backwards, I'm afraid. It's that the auditing companies are looking at the hangnail, they're looking at the obvious thread that's going to unstitch the whole thing, and they're going, I better not touch that then. I don't think I'd be doing my due diligence if I examined just how bad that got. I'm going to leave that well alone. This is a sensible thing to do. Yep, all looks good. It's all fine. And then like 6 months later, as Rob says, as we implode, it's like, oh, what do you mean there was a hangnail or a thread hanging loose? I never saw that. Like, they're being paid not to look. They're being paid, yeah, to give a clean bill of health. And
guy, guy who signs off Grover House.
Yes, that's it. That's their role.
Yeah. So, but what I didn't know until I started reading about this, but what, you know, you will also know now, is that the government does actually have a regulator for auditors, a thing called the Financial Reporting Council, which is about as exciting as you think, but it may have some, like, small problems, according to, like, again, the parliamentary testimony from last week, which was, by the way, given by its chief officer, a guy called Richard Moriarty, which is just fantastic.
Fuck off. I was going to ask if it was staffed by three goblets and a swan, but that's fucking worse.
So this is a quote from him in the Financial Times. At the moment, I'm only sheriff for half the county, and my arsenal is weaker than that of other regulators. I'm not asking for much more than what other regulatory bodies in the UK have today, Moriarty told the House of Commons Business and Trade and Select Committee. So, well, and he's not incorrect. So among the problems that this council has in, like, regulating the auditors is...
A lack of teeth?
Gummy nips would be a polite way of phrasing it, I think. So apparently, the Financial Reporting Council, companies overseen by it, only have to hand over information and documentation, even during investigations, on a voluntary basis. So, like, it has no power to compel. It has power.
It's so fucking great when you hear, like, the comparison that, say, a person who is self-employed and the obligations, yes, that they are put under with HMRC rather, versus a fucking corporation that makes billions of pounds a year or whatever, and they only have to give the stuff that they want to give to the regulators. Fucking beautiful. Like, yeah. Corporations aren't people, but only because they're better than people.
Yeah. It's a regulator, but in the sense... A regulator, but in the sense that the guy who turns up to check you've got a license from the TV licensing authority is a regulator, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It gets better, though, because apparently about 40% of the funding for this whole body comes from industry itself, and very often, like, the big auditing companies just simply don't pay. So, like, their CEO spends a lot of time, like, going to these companies cap in hand saying, by the way, you haven't settled your bill for the last few years. But because they can't compel any payment, you know, they are incredibly reliant on the people they are supposed to regulate to pay them. And I wonder if that's, you know, smells at all like the, you know, the auditor's profession as a whole, just in and of itself, which is... You know, it just fucking incredible. It reminds me a lot, by the way, if you're looking for a parallel, of like 2008, where like the credit rating agencies, so like Moody's and
Rob,
such, were paid by people with the securities.
Let me stop you there. The Big Short is just a cool movie with a lot to aspire to, and that's exactly what the regulators would have taken away from it. Cool guys walking around, shouting at each other, saying cool shit.
Being dudes.
And being dudes, that's right, going to Las Vegas, having a good time, yelling at some more people, and then all going home and then making loads of money and being sad about it. That is what we aspire to as regulators.
Yeah, yeah, and like Karen Gillan working for like the regulator and going to Vegas so that she can land a job like with the private equity.
Maybe Margot Robbie will turn up in your bathtub, you never know.
Yeah, like
I can't get her out of the thing.
I see no problems.
I keep installing.
Get out! It's filthy in there.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
I'm just saying, if Anthony Bourdain wants to like turn up in my kitchen and make me soup from like days old haddock, then like I'm okay with that. I don't see a problem. It's all good. It's all ethical.
James, we are recording just after Easter, so, you know, it's not entirely impossible.
I'm just saying, if I had to pick someone to raise from the dead, right?
Anyway, so apart from, like, those things, which I'll have some, you know, mild problems with them, apparently it can't regulate competition within the audit market. So, like, if there are four big firms, like, there are only four big audit companies, and between the four of them, they regulate like all the major companies that are listed on the London Stock Exchange. But that's not a problem. And also, like, this council, even if they wanted to regulate it, which they frequently don't, they can't, because they don't have that authority either. Nor can they go after like directors of auditing companies if the financial shenanigans like really start to get very smelly.
I mean, so, it is crucial at this stage that we do remember that these people do in fact have addresses.
But it is wild if you think about it. Like the sort of the inherent death drive, and I know this is not, you know, Marx meant by, you know, the capitalism eventually sees, you know, creates its own destruction, but like the capitalism's desire to sort of dissolve everything and like, you know, hack at the pillars of its own survival really is a magical thing. Because like where we started, for capitalism to function at all in a sort of economic textbook manner, there need to be trustworthy auditors. But, you know...
Yeah, but Rob, what do you need that... What do you need an auditor for when you can just say that you've made a 3% increase in your profits every quarter for the last 18, 20, 30 quarters, whatever. Never mind the fact that you have completely gutted every single thing in your company that actually did anything, but the number is very big, and that's very exciting.
Yeah. Grover Auditor is actually doing us a favour, because capitalism won't start eating away at the foundations. Why would it? There's all sorts of tasty house meat under the stairs.
And just to I mean, again, I haven't bothered looking into what Labour's saying about this, because I freakily could sum it up the energy. But there was a little last bit, a quote I want to read from the FT, which reported on this. Speaking on the same session on Tuesday, the Kevin Hollinen rake, Enterprise and Markets Minister, said that the government was, quote, not against establishing a better, more powerful regulator, as indeed they had promised, and that it
yeah,
was,
yeah, but not
quote,
for it.
Yeah, yeah, but fantastically, yeah. But, quote, he also said, we are keen to legislate when we get the time to do that.
Yeah, I've just found this hangnail, and unfortunately, until I get rid of it, I can't do any legislation that'll give the... a regulator anything resembling a set of teeth, so you're just gonna have to wait. Yeah.
We are
whoops, it's the end of the parliament, and we've just been fucking annihilated in a general election, but I hope the next guy wants to do this thing that he has made absolutely no indications that he'll ever want to do, because he basically just become a puppet mannequin thing representing the CBI.
We're very busy leveling up.
He added, by the way, fantastically, we are not anti-regulation. We are always conscious about the red tape and making sure that businesses aren't burdened by red tape. So yes, we like regulation, but not regulation. Don't be silly. What are you all about?
Like, it's just
efficiency,
Rob,
there's regulation, right? And then there's regulation.
I mean, it's all about efficiency, because right, you could burden business with all the red tape of actually having to, you know, do their fucking jobs in a way that is vaguely socially constructive, or you could take the money that would be going to the regulation sector that's actually doing the job of like supervising, and just take a portion of it and give it straight to the politicians, meaning that less money is spent overall. It seems like a clear winner, frankly. Why are you against efficiency, Rob?
Well, James, actually, what I have for you for tonight's article read is a secret third answer, which is to do absolutely nothing, because the problems are simply there.
Hello, and thank you for choosing Podcasting is Praxis. Our podcasters are experiencing an unusually high volume of unfunny bits at the moment, so you've been placed in a queue. Your patronage is important to us, and I need to inform you of the great benefits you freeloaders are missing out on by not subscribing on Patreon. A back catalogue of premium episodes, plus a bonus episode every month, ad-free regular episodes, plus you get access to our Discord, which, in addition to being able to harass the Praxis cast crew with your favourite Star Wars characters, will allow you to listen to all of your favourite cutting room floor moments, such as... And...
Fuck off, Alistair.
Subscribing lets us create more of these hilarious moments, so please do subscribe for just a fiver a month on patreon.com/praxiscast. And now, back to the episode.
So, this is...
I looked at the problem and I got scared, so I decided to go home.
Hang on a sec. Just wait a sec. Right, okay. Sure, I'm ready. Let's do this. Go on. Hurt me, Rob.
So
hurt me.
This is after my, you know, mind rays removed Seb Payne from the Financial Times. I have a new project.
I hope you use your powers for evil sometime.
That is to
what's the point of living in the castle if he doesn't?
So my next project is to remove Janan Ganesh from the Financial Times, who has written this piece. It's called "The Era of the Unfixable Problem." The subheader is "Refugee flows, low birth rates, and left behind regions persist because there is no answer, not because politicians are useless."
Read, there are problems, and I don't like the solutions.
Also, yes.
The question everyone is answering, nothing is to be done. Yes, okay.
finally, we have an answer.
Yeah. Right, quote, "The urban development corporations, the regional development agencies, the local enterprise partnerships, then, in the last decade, as merciful relief from this grinding, almost Soviet language, the Northern Powerhouse."
Oh, yeah, okay.
You know, all these things started during the time of noted Soviet Margaret Thatcher, John Major, and Tony Blair, but never you mind, okay? "Whatever they called it, every British government in my lifetime has built an empire of high-powered quangos to revive the deindustrialized regions. each has assigned a person of clout, a deputy prime minister in John.
Person of clout. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm fucking glad to hear that November is getting good work. Like, that's excellent. H-Bomb, just I knew he'd get into government eventually. Hell. Love it. Absolutely love it.
Truly the most discriminated against of all the protected characteristics. People of clout.
Except with their posters, David. Then they should be protected at all costs. Each has assigned a person of clout, a deputy prime minister in John
Fuck off. Yeah. Blue ticks matter.
a deputy prime minister in John Prescott, a chancellor of the Exchequer in George Osborne, the elemental force that was prime age Michael Heseltine to lead this mission.
The elemental force.
Holy shit, that is oh man, I didn't realise we were doing a creative writing exercise of this one.
Which
Rob? This
fucking
is,
element yeah, led?
You've got fire, water, earth, wind and far, and that's what he fucking represented. Wow, we keep
Legend of the Wind Waker, yes.
We keep allocating all these like extremely powerful people to deal with this problem, and weirdly the problem only seems to get worse. What possible conclusions are there to be drawn? Just that there are no solutions to the problem, not that the people involved are completely uninterested in actually solving the problem.
Well, also, like, it's not because I do think that they were fundamentally not uninterested in, like, solving the problem. I don't think they're, like, callous in that way. I just think they all, in, you know, with variations on the theme, try to apply...
They all just identified a completely different problem.
No, they applied the same, like, sort of, you know, neoliberal marketized solution, which was, you know, like... The way for northern cities to make themselves, you know, to function and to live and to
have you
have
tried being a service
there.
Economy yet? Have you tried opening a Greggs? Have you tried opening a Waitrose? Yeah. Have you tried opening a Warhammer store? Cams? I hear those are all the rage now.
Man, we really need to get rid of this nail, but the only thing I've got is a screwdriver, so I guess we just need to wedge it in a little bit tighter. Like, but, yeah, okay. But, sure. I mean,
you
like,
got a hammer, every nail looks like a screw.
But I mean, but seriously, like, that was sort of, you know, it's always the same thing. And, like, in this sense, I hate to say it, but, like, Ganesh does have a not unreasonable point.
Do not dare finish that sentence.
The Urban Development Corporation, the Regional Development Agency, the Local Enterprise Partnership, Leveling Up, Northern Powers, what they all did was, roughly speaking, with some variations on the theme, the same thing, which is to say to northern cities, ex-mining towns, ex-fishing towns, what have you, is to say, well, we are in a global market now, we can't do anything and don't want to, above all, disturb the mechanisms of capitalism, so you have to make yourself more attractive, and the only money we will give you is to say to like a local council or some fucking authority in the north, or wherever, you know, poverty abounds, is to say, we will give you some money, but instead of you using that money to build something for yourself, you must do it to enter into a partnership with a call center or some other fly-by-night industry or an Amazon warehouse where, you know, they exist to strip out the humanity and, you know, pay people minimum wage or 0 hours wages or whatever they can. And that recipe was just right over and over and over again, because the reason... But this is why I want to read this, because Ganesh is so fucking wrong. It's not like there are no solutions, is that under this existing model, which Ganesh loves like no man ever has before, there are no solutions as this, other than this one, which has been shown to fail.
Yeah, but that's what I meant about misidentifying the problem. Like you said it there, the problem is the poverty and the poor quality of life and all that kind of stuff. But that's not the problem they identified. The problem they identified was, the GDP could be higher in these areas.
Yeah, it's it, and not look at, you know, like, what does it take for human beings to reproduce themselves in their towns, in their, you know, leveling up communities?
Do you know what would have been funny, though?
What does it take for human happiness to exist?
It would have been funny, though, if in trying to address the problem of the GDP in these places is too low, is they came to the Stalinist solution, which is to forcibly relocate Alan Sugar.
Yeah.
My only question, Alistair, the only question I have, comrade, is where?
Anywhere. The ocean. I don't give a fuck.
It doesn't matter. All that matters is that Alan Sugar is being constantly fucking moved about, completely
incessant, and he can do nothing about it.
A one-man mobile gulag. Every second is his gulag.
The next season of The Apprentice is going to be like Where in the World is Carmen Electra, but it's just like a constantly shifting Alan Sugar.
We will simply make Alan Sugar live in the Potemkin village.
Anyway, back to the article. And still, in 2024, if you want some dirt cheap applause, just accuse politicians of, quote, ignoring people outside London and its halo of commuter counties. That's not a thing that actually happens or anything. It's not, you know, video of Rishi Sunak literally saying to his constituents in a garden party that, you know, they're using money designed from the Levelling Up Fund to, I don't know, build a new fucking polo track in whatever his fucking constituency is.
Rishi Sunak standing in front of a crowd just listing out counties that are like further than Leeds. And like,
that's literally Lisa
Nandy's applause.
How does this lie about the political class manage to live on? Because the alternative is too painful to countenance. The alternative is accepting that the problem of left-behind regions might have no solution.
Oh, convenient. The problem is that there is no solution to these problems. Ah, well, that's a tied a nice little bow on it. So we just let these places languish in despair.
Is this article going to end with the supposition that actually, because there's no solutions, we should all just accept that, and therefore the problem is actually within us the whole time?
I'll leave Janesh to finish his own argument, but I shall keep reading for now. I don't want to give back too many spoilers. Ooh.
The problem was inside you the whole time. Indeed, it's your problem, David, not mine.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
It's like fucking Hillary Clinton saying, get over it. Like, get over yourself. There's only two choices and these are it. It's the exact same fucking attitude. Eat your fucking slop and be grateful, you pricks.
Pokemon, I mean, go into the wilderness and perish. Yeah, love it.
That is, the state, though it should never stop trying, can only do so much against foreign wage competition, technological automation, and other global forces that have eroded a certain kind of blue-collar community. Ask the American Midwest.
How about we ask Cuba?
Again?
How about we fuck...
Sorry, go on, James.
No, just like, how about we ask Cuba? How about we ask Cuba? There is a country that's been shat upon at with great velocity from a very high height for a very long time, and yet they manage, God bless them, to like at least attempt to provide for their people and look after their communities and, like, you know, they fucking produced they produced their own COVID vaccines despite international sanction. Apparently they're quite good and we can't get them because of those sanctions. Like, you know, these guys, like, Cuba shows that actually, yes, even if literally the entire Western world is against you, you can make a fucking go of it. It's just going to be hard. Like, fuck off.
I mean, this is the real difference between what are actually difficult choices and what are not difficult choices for politicians.
Yeah.
Because a difficult choice to a politician is, who do I immiserate? The person who gives my party like tens of thousands of pounds a year.
Is that Jess Phillips thing, that you shouldn't be in politics if you weren't willing to immiserate at least some people?
It's just laughable, right? Yeah, if you aren't prepared to immiserate at least some people, it's just a shame that it's always the same people. It's always the people who don't wield real political power, people who are disenfranchised. Unfortunately, we are forced to shit on these people like we shit on Cuba. And these people, because they do not have a state, essentially, they can just fucking like it or lump it. And because they've got no choice, they have to lump it.
Well, I mean, and it's also like what I get here is like this is very much like the sort of the dead hand of like latter era Tony Blair as well. It's like you know, I wanted to do these things. I wanted to make, you know, the prosperity outside London better, and I wanted to do things, and maybe I didn't want to privatize everything inside, but, you know, you see, the market was simply such a way now. The market, you know, history, the great forces of history that I, as the leader of a state, have no control over, just they do these things to us, and we have no agency or power, so we must simply, you know, accommodate, or, you know, like the American Midwest, be allowed to perish under, you know, an avalanche of deindustrialization, followed by drug abuse, followed by deaths of despair, followed by, you know, as if, because the only way any of this works is if you say, well, the state can't do, shouldn't do, ever do anything, and if it should only do something within this framework that I have constructed, which is purposefully killing the thing that I say can't probably be saved anyway. It's the logic is so circular that it's really quite spectacular.
I mean, it's just like example after example of problems with solutions they don't like. This is what the title should have been. Like, have I been wrong?
The project to level up, I remember when the phrase was rebalance, the UK regions is going to flop again. But it does serve as a parable for something wider in the world.
It's going to be so stupid.
Jesus. Okay.
This is the era
that
of
that is the parable guy, yeah.
This is the era of the insoluble problem. Consider the baby bust.
Oh, what?
People are doing water babies?
Birth rates in rich countries are too low to maintain populations at their current level. You don't need to take a Muskian view of this trend, quote, a much bigger threat to...
No, stop. You're not allowed to use Musk in that way. We are not going to have, like, Musk as an adjective. Sorry, we're not doing that. There is no philosophical Elon Musk. It's not allowed. You can't say that.
Counterpoint, I'm fine with rewriting history so that actually Elon Musk made up the 14 words. That's his thing now. That's fine. Like,
yeah, I mean,
ascribe that to him. Why not? Fuck it.
I mean, basically, Musk did say that, like, the lack of, and, you know, it's never spoken, but this is what they always mean, the lack of white babies is a, quote, yep, much bigger risk to civilization than global warming.
Cool. What we need is more people in the really fucking highly polluting countries. That's definitely the fucking solution to all this. More people in fucking the US and Britain and, fucking Germany or whatever, who fucking cares? Like, that's it. That's what we need. More fucking high-consuming people. That's absolutely the solution to all of this.
Shut the fuck up. Right, no, actually, hang on. I'm going to push back here, David. Have you actually looked at the stats on where all of that fucking consumption is happening?
I know. But guess who joins the US fucking military?
I don't...
My point is, though, if you're going to make the fucking argument here about actually it would be good for global warming to have more fucking white, you can't also have it the other way around when you say it's terrible what's happening in Africa. Like, make your fucking mind up. Is it more babies are good or more babies are bad? Pick a fucking lane and stop being a fucking racist dipshit with it.
How, though? If subsidized childcare and other pro-natalist policies make a difference, Nordic nations would be ultra-fertile.
A difference to what? Notably fertile. Number the of fucking white babies. Fjords.
As it is, Sweden and Denmark have the same birth rate as the US. Governments could offer unprecedented cash incentives to procreate, but at a huge upfront fiscal cost,
and the peak of
non-parents.
What is the actual fucking end game of this, right? So there's more babies, okay, there's more people, okay. What are those people doing to fucking solve anything?
Well,
with the current existing system we have, how are they going to do any better at this other than this but more? And this obviously
also exist for future generations will also simply exist to, you know, safeguard the white race and create a future for their white children. It just, it goes on like that. It stretches out into a glorious infinity.
Oh, Christ on a fucking bike. Like, aren't
you glad you came on tonight?
I'm really fucking not. Like, I'm really not. I hate this guy so much.
I've got a thought for you, Jana Ganesh. Why don't you just bang your head against the problem over and over and over again until the problem changes in some material way? If nothing else, one of us will end up feeling better about the situation after a while.
But at a huge upfront fiscal cost and the peak of non-parents, which leaves the state with what instrument? Moral exhortation? So the only policies that are available is to, like, pay a lot of people to fuck more and get more white babies, but that would make people who are fucking not to produce babies angry. We have not tried this one thing, and we are simply out of ideas.
Jesus fuck.
At some point, the childless or one-child trend has to be seen for what it is, a byproduct of affluence and secularization.
Motherfucker! Motherfucker! Are you shitting me? You just fucking pointed out that Nordic countries actually give some provision of childcare, and you are now saying, ah, yes, it is the result of the opulent lives that Britons lead that has caused them to decide to only have one child or less. Like, what the
fuck?
And
also because you're Christian anymore.
Also, yeah, because you put down a Jedi on the 2010 census or whatever.
it's because women aren't as enslaved as they used to be. That's it. That's the only thing. That's all it's ever been. You give women choice about their reproductive health and who they get to, like, have children with, and they make decisions that suit them as individuals. That's it. That's all
it's not just that, though.
Because, yeah, how the fuck can someone afford a fucking child in this?
Yeah, place? Yeah.
Honestly, everyone that I know that has had a kid, I think they're insane. And not in any sort of fucking, like, bad meaning way. Just, how are you doing that? How can you afford that?
100%.
Like, that is wild to me. The idea of having the fucking financial ability to do that, or even feel that it's a financial risk that you can take, all fucking respect and power to them for it, but my God. Like,
yeah, I mean, like,
it is such a fucking huge thing to take on, and it's so much harder because there's no fucking money going about. The wages are shit. The wages are only going to get worse. The jobs are shit. The jobs are only going to get worse. Where the fuck are you finding the time to do parenting? Like, how do you manage that physically? You are some sort of fucking superhuman to me. I am astounded and fucking shocked at the concept of it and how it can remotely be regarded as, oh, well, actually, people only do it because they can afford not to. Motherfucker, how can they afford to do it?
Well, it's like, in my situation, right, like, my I don't make a huge amount of money, but my partner has a well-paying job, and we live in a very high-functioning country as opposed to the UK, but everything is expensive here, including childcare. So, like, we've been talking about this, like, on and off, and I think genuinely one of the biggest obstacles that we have to, like, seriously think about children is the questions, like, where the fuck in our budget is the money going to come from to, like, you know, pay for childcare and all that shit, because, you know, we both need to work. And it's just like, how do we, and if, honestly, if we can't do it, and like I said, you know, my partner earns a good salary, how is it a problem of general affluence, whereas, like, I know a lot of people who are quite affluent, also for, like, Swiss standards, and even for them, they're like, yeah, we really had to, like, sit down and, like, spreadsheet this motherfucker before we had kids.
Yeah.
And it's like, but this is the thing. It's like the root cause is women get to choose. And then as soon as they get the choice and they get to make, like, reproductive healthcare decisions, then there's the questions that follow up from it, which are basically boiled down to two things. Number one, is it physically affordable? Can material circumstances support it? And then number two, is there a future worth giving them? And we fail on both counts.
Well, I mean, James, have you considered Undoing these things, even if we were minded to, would require a bizarre type of government.
What? Bizarre. Fascist? Like that,
no,
I mean,
communist.
The fascists in the States, here's the thing, the fascists in the States are taking away women's reproductive rights because they're like, well, we can't give them money so that they can actually like afford it and fuck hope for the future. But if we just take away their reproductive rights, they'll just be bounced into it because people are horny and they'll fuck anyway, and that'll solve the problem. That's their solution. So,
yeah, but I have an even better problem for you that we also cannot solve.
Mm-hmm.
And even this isn't the ultimate case of an insoluble problem in the modern world. No, that plays out every day along the southern US border and on Mediterranean shorelines. It is impossible, politically, if not physically, for America or Europe to accept all, or most, or even a large percentage of the people who seek refuge here. At the same time,
Why is it, David?
It simply is.
Oh, well, that's news to me.
Yes. Oh, I'm glad we cleared that up.
At the same time, it is unconscionable to leave them in poverty, in catastrophic climates, or in bandit-ravaged failed states.
Yeah, it's unconscionable, but we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, like, funnily enough, between an irresistible force and an immovable object, somehow that irresistible force is just going to be overcome. Like, call me funny here, but I find it very, very hard to imagine this will end in anything other than machine guns at the borders, so...
Yeah, and also, you mean, as it is? What if someone did Frontex? Wouldn't that be weird?
It's just, this guy's just fucking insulting us, frankly, with this shit at this point. Yeah. Like, pretending that we're not putting up the barbed wire and we're not machine gunning boats to make them sink and all this kind of shit, like...
Much like Jinan Ganesh, Jinan Ganesh assumes that you also don't actually know things.
Also, it's weird how, like, between, you know, the irresistible force and the immovable object, that, like, the people that seem to get ground to pace between them tend to be, you know, poor and brown and, you know, simply non-human to most people. Yeah, it's really weird how that happens. There's probably no way of going about that. Anyway.
Yeah, no, so, I'm sure it's not by design in any way.
No. And so, we have the purest example of an intractable situation in the world today. Mock, if you wish, the UK's plan to send asylum seekers to Rwanda. But alternative ideas seem to range from hopelessly small-time, brackets, processing asylum claims quicker, as though that solves the problem of demand, to pie-in-the-sky stuff about investing in the Sahel to reduce incentives to leave it.
Okay, so, first off, infinite supply does not mean infinite demand, you fucking moron. Buy a day ticket on a bus and see what happens to you. You'll get bored and leave, you fucking prick. Secondly, what was the fucking second thing he said? What was that again?
Pie in the sky stuff about investing in the Sahel. Can't do that.
Oh, fucking hit. You absolutely can. The trouble is, the only way that the West ever fucking invests in anywhere that has a fucking, you know, problem going on that is causing people to leave the country as fucking refugees is that we've been doing nothing but shipping fucking bombs into it. That's the support that we provide. So, look, maybe we stop doing that. Is that something that is a feasible policy to Jinan Ganesh, or is that just an impossible part of the fucking problem as well?
The ultimate source of refugee flows isn't this or that Western misjudgment, but tectonic stuff. The geographic proximity of rich places to poor ones, and the fact that Africa is bucking the worldwide decline in birth rates.
I mean,
there's the other side of that fucking coin.
Yeah.
Like, his first clause wasn't wrong just because they're not misjudgments, they're intentional judgments. Like, they're very deliberately pursuing this policy. But of course we're into the fucking, like, you know, eugenicist fucking skull measuring, like, oh, population will be end of us all, kind of end of a spectrum. Just, yeah, great, okay, sure. Sure. Tell us all about how the Earth can't sustain this all without any reference to the particular villains who are doing the damage. Let's have that. I mean, I always love hearing that story. It's a great old classic. Puts me right to sleep.
Here's an idea. See if all these look really rich places are dead close to all the really poor ones. Why don't we solve that by removing the places? And I don't mean just fucking disappear them. I mean, simply tear down the fucking borders, make the places borders, no longer exist. Yeah, just countries, they're not real anymore, fuck it. We're post-Westphalian now, there's a fucking solution.
Also, there's like this is like a fundamental misunderstanding of migration as well. It's not like even if we dissolved all borders tomorrow, it doesn't mean that the entire population of the Sahel would like arrive on our doorsteps tomorrow. They send like a percentage of a percentage of a percentage of like mainly the young men with a capacity for labor to these places. Very rarely with an intention that they stay here. They send them like to the UK or Fortress Europe or, you know, the American border to make enough money so they can live, you know, on a fraction of that in the whole family. So can live in Ecuador or in Mali or, you know, or in Sudan or wherever, you know. It's like, it's simply not true that you, like, if you dissolved all borders tomorrow, like, you would simply, it's not two columns on a spreadsheet where every, literally, you know, the column poor just jumps over one right. It doesn't work that way. People like being where they are, generally speaking. Like,
yeah. Famously, humanity never actually developed the concept of a home. Purely nomadic for hundreds of thousands of years now.
They're also, like, just generally solving the problem of immigration by making Britain an incredibly shit place to move to, where there's not going to be opportunity. So, like, you know, that's one end of it, frankly, getting immigration down. Just make it a very unattractive place to be.
Yeah. And we're doing that in such innovative new ways. Look forward to the Theresa May go home blimp.
Oh, I know some people who can build one for you, David.
Good.
There are such things as intractable problems. There is such a thing as rational despair. Saying so marks one out as callous, but not saying so, pretending that all questions have answers, is worse. Because if a problem persists, it must mean that politicians are incompetent or don't care.
I'm so sick of this. This is the worst article in fucking ages. Oh, and hell.
We've such a cornucopia to choose from as well.
Mm-hmm. From an essentially positive premise that nothing is beyond human ingenuity, we arrive at a cynical and acrimonious atmosphere.
Yeah, purely based off the incompetence of politicians. They're just not very good at their jobs. Do you know what their jobs are? Do you know what they do? Do you know what their purpose is? Do you know what the purpose of a representative in a liberal democracy in the West in 2024 actually is? It is fucking connections and wealth extraction, fucking tit.
The purpose of the system, Janesh, just in case you were confused, is what it does, not what it says on the fucking side of the tin. It's not the same thing. Jesus.
Rob, I heard that work will set you free, and that was written right above the door, so I don't see...
I mean, And also, it's like, but politicians, I think for the most part, it's certainly in the UK, are either incompetent or don't care. I do think it is as baseline as that, but it's like, that's not... The problem isn't that. The problem is, you know, isn't that the answer to that is to just be cynical and say, oh, you know, there are intractable problems. We can't fix them, you know, not even with our prime Muskin philosophy. It's like you can do better. The system can change. Like we're leftists and we stay leftists because we keep believing that better worlds are still fucking possible, even in 2024. Because otherwise, if you just sit in your capitalism, in your, you know, late-stage capitalism, in your neoliberal little bubble, in your Davos world, then yes, of course you come to the conclusion that nothing can ever get any better because you simply refuse to accept change in the system. It's an incredible way.
And yet the numbers still go up. Like, these are the same people that say nothing good can happen, and yet they all know and expect that the number will continue to increase because it must. Like, so if that's not the measure of things getting better, what are you doing wrong? Where may be the fundamental fucking issue in your identification of the problem?
I mean, we did talk about it because it was too late, but I'll just bring it up, too late to include it in the nuggets, we'll just bring it up now. But like, according to like the new like global wealth report, like last year there were 141 new billionaires joining the cast, and there are now, in a new category of people that actually appear
a resounding endorsement on the system. Do not continue reading whatever it is you were just about to say.
There are now 12 people who the same report calls cento billionaires, as in they possess $100 billion in wealth. Oh no, we can't fix these problems.
How much was it going to cost to solve world hunger again?
Just a couple billion. Like, honestly.
Yeah.
Housing, you know. Even housing in the UK, like, I'm not even talking about the Sahel or you know, the Central America or wherever, you know, like, it would be vastly cheaper there. You could solve housing in the UK as well.
You could, but capitalism operates on that way. When there's too much of a resource, it loses value. So, like, if all of these people were to do that, then, like, I don't know, like, money would fucking implode conceptually or something, because actually everyone's spending it fucking wrong. Like, the system self-corrects in such a way that only misery is fucking possible unless you're one of these very select few people. And even then, you're only a fucking tool of that misery.
I am well located to understand that sometimes there is no good move. With high public debt, the UK cannot make big net tax cuts or borrow much more. With a high tax
bill. I'm constantly surrounded by rakes in his own mind, correctly identifies rakes.
I am well situated. I'm just like, tell us that your parents constantly told you were a disappointment without telling us that your parents constantly told you were a disappointment.
With high public debt, the UK can't make big tax cuts or borrow much more. With a high tax burden, it can't raise taxes to improve public services without compromising...
What high tax burden? What, like, historically? Historically, is this a high tax burden? I think it's fucking not. What the fuck are you talking about, high tax burden? We have incredibly low tax for some people, who coincidentally are the people who should be paying the most.
Oh, James, you have
activated Rob's trap card.
Yeah, exactly. let me read you the next clause. Without compromising incentives and the animal spirits in business.
The animal spirits.
Oh yes, my degree in animist business studies is finally paying off. People said that if you're a business shaman, you'll get no work. But I told them, just you wait. One day I will invoke the great spirit. It will descend into my flesh. It will show me visions of untold luxury, and I will bring that to my tribe. And lo, it has come to pass. Fucking
but it's
hell.
I mean, it's Friedman, fuck, isn't it? Or it's Adam Smith, the animal spirits of the market. He's quoting somebody else. I know that wording from somewhere. But yeah, like, you know, we can't tax people because otherwise, you know, the special cento billionaire might leave, and that'd be horrible. Brexit has turned out to be a giant clucking turkey of an idea. Brackets, 32%.
Turkeys don't cluck, you fucking idiot. They gobble.
Yeah, but...
Get one fucking basic fact right.
He's got Jan in there. You got to admit.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm supposed to take lessons about fucking the overarching politics of our time and economics from a man who can't even do the fucking farm noises right.
The cow says the tax burden is too high.
Look, when he was a child, all he read was Animal Farm, so it's not really his fault for not knowing the noises.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I only ever read the pop-up book of Capital, so, like, it's all got the little buttons. It's great.
Also, I think it's quite, you know, unfair of Janesh to do that in the animal spirit of Brexit, which apparently is a turkey, but, you know, it's an animal spirit.
The thing is, Brexit was
right
actually
there.
Brexit was actually a very good tool with which to drive a wedge between Labour's electoral coalition in the years 2015 to 2019, which conveniently, once that period ended and Corbyn had to step down, just wasn't an issue anymore. So, yeah, great. Well done,
don't
everyone.
Worry about it. Yeah. Everything is good now. But
that was nothing to do with it. They said they were going to get Brexit done, and guess what? On that day, they did.
But there is little stomach for the national rancor involved in trying to undo it anytime soon.
I want to feed this cunt to the national rancor.
The animal spirit of Britain.
Can we put Alan Sugar in the national rancor too? Can we do that?
Yeah. Every columnist has to stand on a floor that has a fucking trapdoor on it. As we authorise the articles, that's how the future will work.
Yeah, if you're cold next winter, you can sleep inside the national rancor to maintain heat.
Don't make me open the Wikipedia to tell me why that's wrong.
Rob doesn't care.
No, correct. Is there a high-income country on Earth that is so exquisitely checkmated? I can't think of one.
Checkmate in the sense that you walked into the corner of a room and said, huh, I've got nowhere else to go. And someone has said to you, turn left or right. I do not want to do that. Yeah. This is the situation we find ourselves in.
Just like that's it. It literally is. This dude is sitting here going, no, the only winning move here is not to play. When in actual fact, if we really wanted to, we could solve this problem. These problems are in fact very soluble, you know?
Yeah.
They just involve doing things like redistribution of wealth. Gasp.
Fuck. Yeah, that's right. Like dissolving people.
Inside the concept of neoliberal capitalism, it is simply, you know, we've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas. Like, it's just... I can't think of one, but this does make Britain a good place from which to observe a fact of world relevance. Some problems cannot be solved, just mitigated at the edges. Pretending otherwise isn't optimistic or enlightened. It is
sometimes
poisonous to a...
Sometimes all you're able to do is tinker at the edges, and that's just what we've got to make our peace with. Thank you so much, Jan Ganesh, on explaining to us the limits of the neoliberal state.
It is poisonous to a nation's civic health. Indeed, you know, to try something would be poisonous. To simply not step on this rake would be very poisonous.
This is the political equivalent of agoraphobia. Like, what the fuck, man?
Fucking hell. This is... I will not have any of that cyanide, please. I am not keen on that whatsoever. Do not give it to me. I am perfectly content with this huge glass of fucking hemlock.
All right, last line of the article. Oh, for more of the can't do spirit.
I hate him so much. How do you fucking, in a world where Seb Payne is not at the Financial Times, how do you still manage to be worse than Seb Payne in the Financial Times?
At least the good thing about this is, like, the comments, which close always quite quickly when he posts a new article, is just pages and pages of FT readers going, Jesus Christ, you're an idiot. Why do they still pay you?
The one good comment section on any website.
Well, the Financial Times, like, I mean, their whole shtick is they have to keep capital informed as to what's actually going on. So the readers actually want, like, clear-headed, level, you know, clear-eyed, level-headed, just, you know, commentary and examination of the world as it actually is. So when you get like fucking rank ideologues like these kind of creeping in, they do actually kick back against it because they're paying for a product where they actually just want the facts and they want sober analysis, and this guy's giving them neither. So
this guy isn't giving them sober analysis. He's just taking a massive hit of ayahuasca and is about to start shitting himself and vomiting.
If that comment section says anything other than the rat goes squeak, I don't want to fucking hear. Like, fuck this guy.
Well, I think we will end on that note. There's no comment or commentariat this week, because I think we've all had enough of comment and commentariat for one episode.
I've definitely had enough of fucking commentariat anyway. Jesus fucking Christ.
Anyway, that simply leaves us to say that if you like this and you want more of this, you know, not necessarily Jedi Garnish content, for that you have to pay EFT. But you can, you know, pay us at patreon.com/praxiscast for more episodes and all other kinds of delightful benefits. You could also go to praxiscast.tbill.com. And buy t-shirts, because, you know, it's going to be a warm summer again and you want to show off, you know, whatever fleshy body you have.
Get yourself a Hottest Summer on Record shirt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It will the be shirt correct again always this right. year.
Yeah, it's evergreen or brown, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, is there anything
Twitch streams also. Twitch streams are also a thing that we sometimes do. We're getting really fucking bad at this. I might do one on Thursday, so that should be release day this week. So twitch.tv/praxiscast. And if you're sick of hearing the fucking ads, then please do subscribe to the Patreon, because they don't have them on that, because you've already done the thing we want you to.
Exactly. So, you know, from one hopeful podcast to your ears, goodbye and have a lovely day.
Bye.
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 All right, and we can start.